Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. Last week, the government, somewhat surprisingly, decided to endorse the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Surprisingly, because the Labor government didn't sign up to it in 2007, making us one of only four countries to do so, along with Australia, Canada and the US. It's a move that's greatly pleased the Māori Party, whose co-leader Peter Sharples was there doing the endorsing, but has prompted criticism from unlikely political allies, Labor and the ACT Party. I'm joined now by Patrick Holmes, CEO of Amnesty International, who have been vocal supporters of the move. Well, Patrick, thanks for joining us. I suppose I'd like to start by saying the government signing up to the declaration, United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, came as a surprise to many, including within Parliament. Was it a surprise to you, or was it fairly well signposted from where you were?
It wasn't signposted, although the Prime Minister had said that you know, this was work in progress, and so we expected something. I think the announcement took us by surprise by the speed of it, but something that we've campaigned actively on for many years.
It's interesting in that politically it was something that people from opposite sides of the spectrum, I think the only thing that that Labor and the ACT Party possibly ever agreed on was that we shouldn't have done this, quite possibly for very different reasons. Now, I would imagine that, generally speaking, you know, maybe a group like Amnesty International would find themselves more aligned with perhaps the views of Labor and the Greens and so forth. The Greens were in support of it. What do you think of Labor's criticisms of the adherent signing up to the bill?
Well, I mean, Amnesty's apolitical and non-denominational, so we don't align ourselves with any political party. And I think it's important to say as well that we don't take any funding from the government, so we are entirely independent. So on that basis, we wouldn't align ourselves with either or any of the main parties on this.
I suppose, well, let me short-circuit this, because when I said aligning with, I don't necessarily mean that you're following Labor's principles come hell or high water, but I would have said that, in general, Labor's policies of social justice or the Greens' policies of social justice might find more in common with Amnesty International's views than maybe that of the ACT Party.
I think it would be fair to say that we would have more in common with parties that support these kind of policies. Absolutely right, and support human rights and put human rights at the core, at the centre of their agenda. That would be true to say. It's still a relatively new government that we're working with National, but of course we're committed to work with whichever government happens to be in power at the time.
So Labor's criticism, for example, of why we shouldn't have signed up and why they didn't sign up to the UN Declaration was that it couldn't be put into practice in reality, that signing up to it would just be, you know, paying lip service to it. We couldn't actually make it happen. John Key seems to have viewed it, the reason that they did it, as more of an aspirational thing for Māori. What do you think of that?
Yeah, it's important to note, I think, that this is not... first of all, we don't sign up to it. The government doesn't sign up to it. This is not a treaty. Mm. It's not legally binding. So you could argue that it's not worth the paper that it's written on. However, it does contain some very important principles in there. And it remains to be seen now whether, in fact, the government is going to go the next step and start to focus on the rights of Indigenous peoples in its formation of policy and law in the future. And I think it's relatively easy for the government to come out and say that they now support this. But given that it's not legally binding, the next stage is really the most important. How does this actually pan out? And that's where I think the focus should now be. What does it actually mean in practice? And we don't know yet.
Do not all laws at the moment have to be made with reference to the principles of the Treaty of Waitangi?
That's my understanding. But bear in mind, this is not a legally binding piece. You know, it's not legislation in that sense. So, you know, this is about the rights of Indigenous peoples, not just our own Indigenous peoples. This is about the rights of Indigenous peoples globally. And, you know, when we failed to be party to this, when it was first agreed in 2007, we were one of only four countries that didn't agree to this.
What was your understanding of why we didn't agree to it at the time?
Well, I think it's been well documented that at the time it was felt to be the contents and the implications untenable with our own existing laws. Now, clearly that's open to debate. And the National Party are now saying that, well, actually, that's not an issue. But there is also, I think it's important that that this should be accepted without any limitation, in full, without any caveats or attachments to it. And at the moment, as I read it, the Prime Minister is saying that, look, we can only agree to this provided we retain our rights to make legislation and law as we see fit, and this will not affect it. So there's a little bit of playing with words there, and I think the devil, of course, will be in the detail about how this now pans out and how we see this being implemented.
I mean, John Key said it was symbolic. One of the greatest, perhaps, things that you'd expect wouldn't come into force anytime soon was the declaration says that indigenous people have a right to sovereignty.
Yeah, I think that's unlikely to be something we see in the near future. But I think it will be very interesting to see how this pans out now with looking at the Foreshore and Seabed Act, which, of course, there is a consultation process ongoing at the moment, and whether the rights of Indigenous peoples, whether this impacts on that consultation and the way this changes in the future.
Do you think there's a concern with this move to affirm the declaration that it raises the expectations amongst Māori or amongst even the Māori Party particularly that don't have a hope of being achieved?
I think there's a real danger of that, and the way this has been talked about by the leaders of the Māori Party maybe would suggest that those expectations have been raised. And I think that's a real concern that ordinary people in the street, whether they be Māori or any other, then I think it's important that the expectations are not raised in a way that can't be met. But this has been lauded as really has been historic by the Māori Party, and I think it is historic. But I hope it's historic for the right reasons going forward. And I think we will have to wait and see just what comes from this.
Yeah, the land wars were historic as well. Do you see parallels here with the Seabed and Foreshore Act, where you've also had Amnesty International have also had something to say?
Yeah,
in terms of raising expectations, perhaps.
Yeah, I think there are some strong parallels here in terms of the rights of Indigenous peoples, whether they be in New Zealand or elsewhere, are at the core of a lot of the work that Amnesty does. So, of course, we've been interested in following this and campaigning long and hard for this, for UN DRIP. We're also, of course, fully engaged with the process around the consultation for Foreshore and Seabed. And, again, we're looking for some real progress and real change here, and not just window dressing.
What would you like to see happen ideally in the Foreshore and Seabed situation?
Well,
do you think what Labor did in the first place was a mistake?
Well, again, I wouldn't want to get drawn into which one party did was right or wrong at the time. I think those decisions were taken in the political climate at the time. I think the political climate is probably different now. There is a strong relationship, it appears, between National and Māori Party. And I think the opportunity is here to make a real difference.
Okay, given that you don't necessarily want to get into a political debate here, what do you see as the preferred outcome from the Seabed and Foreshore situation?
I guess in two words, fair and equitable. We would like to see the outcome being fair for all New Zealanders. Clearly, there's a strong Indigenous rights Māori element to this, but as far as Amnesty is concerned, it's about equity for all peoples. Mm. So that's really where we're coming from. But of course, you can't ignore the link to what we're here talking about today, which is about the rights of Indigenous peoples. Clearly, they're inextricably linked to the Foreshore and Seabed Act.
Now, some people would say, why is Amnesty International? They get Falun Gong people out of prisons and sort out Aung San Suu Kyi and so forth. What are you doing here talking about this? Tell me how Amnesty International fits, where its remit comes from.
Sure. Well, Amnesty is nearly 50 years old, and we started, our traditional work really was around prisoners of conscience, people thrown into jail for nothing more than expressing a political belief. But we've always worked on other things too. Death penalty, I guess, is what we're best known for, but we also work on the economic and social rights and things like poverty, right to clean water, right to housing. So this fits squarely within our traditional remit, but maybe not what we're best known for in New Zealand.
Brilliant. Look, we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
That was the CEO of Amnesty International, Patrick Holmes. After the break, we blow the lid off Privacy Week and we get inside the neatly shaven head of UK comic Terry Auderton.